Happy Friday. You made it. It's the Raptor Show. It's Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner. We will be joined by Kristen Peek to talk some college basketball and NBA draft. We'll be joined by Mo DeKeel to talk some NBA wide stuff. We got Raptors, Jazz tonight as well. But Matt, before any of that, first of all, how are you?
I'm great. It looks, we had a reprieve from spring for a couple days. It's the way it goes this time of year, but now it's warm again. So I'm happy.
Was it warm today? I wore a jacket in today still, but we're getting there.
I almost wore shorts. I decided last second not to, because it was still like in the low 40s, which in Canadian is what?
Single digits.
Yeah, single
like
digits.
Four? I don't know.
Yep.
Okay.
But warm enough.
We're getting close.
Yeah.
We're getting close. This is like...
Softball season is upon us.
It is upon us. We got to... I'm taking the train home to babysit my nephews tomorrow, and it's always a decision of like, is it going to be warm enough for the next like 36 hours that I don't have to bring a jacket? Because you got to make that decision over like a two-day window.
It depends how much you're going to be outside.
Probably not a lot.
Yeah.
There's no like snow to play in, and it's too like mushy and muddy.
Yeah, you don't need a jacket then.
Yeah, I should be all right. There was disaster in college basketball last night. Obviously, there were
a ton
of great games. You know, the SEC tournament's going on. Everyone's watching the draft. I am, of course, talking about the fact that both of my alma maters lost in the U Sports Final Eight yesterday. So UBC in Vancouver, where I did grad school, they are hosting the men's Final Eight. And they got upset in the first round. And Queens, the other school that I went to.
University of Baltimore County?
Yeah. Yeah. UBC. University of British Columbia.
Ah.
It's actually where Jaume Malalela, the Raptors assistant, he played 5 years there as well. It's like so one of the greatest Thunderbirds of all time.
He's in their Wikipedia as notable alumni?
I would assume so if we looked it up, yeah.
What about you?
No, I think they forget that I went there because I dropped out like before I finished.
Dr. Seuss dropped out of Dartmouth. They still claim him.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for one day. They're like, we could just like, you're honorary.
You could be the Dr. Seuss of UBC.
Yeah. There you go. I got to start rhyming a little bit more.
I thought you were talking about Cooper Flagg.
I was. It was the bait and switch.
You got me.
Shout out to, look, I like, it's great to give some shine to the Canadian university programs as well, the men's and women's Final Eight going on right now. It's all, I believe, available to stream for free on CBC and UBC War Memorial Gym, it's where I first did play-by-play and color commentary and stuff like that for the men's and women's team there. So it's cool to see that that's where the event is. But yeah, both of my teams lost in the, it's only an eight-team tournament. They got knocked out in the first round. They're playing in the consolation today.
They're going fishing.
Yeah. It's really interesting. So Queens, who are not historically a great basketball school, and this will take us to NCAA, I promise. They had a standout player last year, and you're looking, and it's like, oh, by the time this player gets better, you know, maybe the program could build around him. You get one more incoming freshman or whatever, and got NIL'd to the U.S. And again, this year they have a hot rookie who the expectation for me now is like, oh, he's going to get NIL'd to go to an NCAA school. So it's getting. While basketball in Canada has gotten bigger and bigger, and it's still cool to check out the U Sports Final Eight and stuff like that, there's a bigger risk now that your top players will get poached by the NCAA.
Yeah, and this happens because we've talked about this. You can improve a lot from like 17, 18 to like 21, 22 when you're out of college. So players that get overlooked or late bloomers, you go to university in Canada a year or two, you develop, you grow, you discover your game, and boom, you're, like you said, getting NIL'd to the States. It happens. Same thing with D2. You go D2, mm-hmm. like you get overlooked by all the D1 schools, and you blossom.
Or even small school, and you go to a major program or a major conference or something like that. And
And you see it in the NBA, guys who didn't reach their potential in college or even later bloomers, and you get better from like 21, 22 when you graduate to like 25, 26. And now they're getting looks in the NBA. Like, it can happen at any point.
Yeah. And I mean, to the point that you've made a bunch this year about the new second apron restrictions and salary cap restrictions is, hey, you find one of those guys with one of your second round picks.
Diamonds in the rough.
Jameson Battle, great example, yep. Right? Five years at an NCAA
Jamal
program.
Shed.
Yeah, older for a prospect, but you get those guys and you got a couple years of really really inexpensive talent there. So you mentioned Cooper Flagg. He did get hurt yesterday. He hurt his ankle. I believe the latest reporting is that he's a long shot to play in the ACC semifinals. Obviously, if you're Duke, you're a lock for the tournament anyway. If there's like, I guess the fact that he's not even like 1,000% ruled out for today is a positive.
Yeah.
Given how bad that looked.
Yeah. If you're Duke, if you're Cooper Flagg, you're not doing anything that's going to risk any long-term damage considering the career you have ahead of you.
Yeah. And the fact that
that
like,
should be the priority.
Duke, like, I'm sure they would love to win the ACC, but if your focus is March Madness, you know, the NCAA tournament, hey, we risk losing a game.
But the problem is that's a week away.
Yeah, I know. It's not a long time.
If you get a bad ankle sprain, it usually lasts for more than 1 week.
Yeah.
So that would be my concern.
Yeah, I just mean like it's encouraging that like they're not even like 100% he's out.
Because he's an animal. He's a competitor. You can see it in the way he plays that if he can get out there and play, he's going to do it. He's not one of those guys that's like, oh, you know, my hip's sore. I need to take a week off. He's not wired that way.
Yeah. Looked bad at the time. Cool to see Con Knipple and Kamon Malawach step up in larger roles because Duke still won that game. But yeah, that's obviously a little deflating as you're like, hey, which prospects should I watch? Who should I lock in on here over the next couple
especially
weeks?
Especially if he gets 1 year in college, you want to see if he can make an NCAA tournament run.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Like three top 10 prospects on the same roster. You kind of, even with all the stuff we talked about yesterday about how, you know, the more experienced teams, the teams that have a little time to build together and gel together might be favor, you know, you might lean toward those teams in a tournament format. It'd still be cool to see three top 10 prospects go on a run together.
That's an exception to that rule.
Yeah.
If you get three top 10 high school prospects, you're probably taking them over anybody in the transfer portal.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see what Kristen Peek thinks about all that. She is an NBA draft analyst. She joins us now. Kristen, you're down in Vegas for the Mountain West tournament. How are we doing? This is like these next couple weeks got to be like Christmas for you, right?
The best time of the year. And I just caught the tail end of what you guys were saying about Cooper Flagg and Duke and, you know, losing Cooper Flagg, devastating. They also lost Jay Lucas, who took the head coaching job at Miami, who was their defensive specialist coach. Like everything, any Duke player you talk to this season, I went to a couple games, I talked to the players. I've obviously covered Cooper, Kamon, all of the freshmen for many years at the high school level. But they said, the way we win games starts at defense. So they lose Cooper Flagg yesterday. They lost Jay Lucas because of the transfer portal rules. So do I think Cooper will play the rest of the ACC tournament? Absolutely not. But for the positive note, and for NBA fans that have lost, their team has lost a lot of games and they want to tune in March and see potential prospects. Cooper is one of the toughest players I know. He is a tough competitor mentally and physically. So I know this is one of those things where it's like, no, I'm not going to sit out and protect my draft stock. He's already solidified himself as the number one draft prospect. He's going to do everything he can to try to play in the tournament.
That's because he's from northern New England. We suffer up there.
Sure.
You think you got a hard winter here?
Yeah.
Go up in the woods in Maine and New Hampshire.
You spent half the show this year complaining about shoveling and raking.
Like, this was a particularly bad winter,
yeah,
for sure.
Okay, Kristen, so that's Duke, and that's good Flagg insight. You are in Vegas, though, for the Mountain West tournament. I guess my first question is more procedural and, like, inside the job. The loaded schedule we have all across college basketball tonight, what are you doing? Like, are you going to have multiple screens out while you're sitting in the media seats at Thomas and Mack? How are you handling this?
Absolutely. This slate of games today is insane. And it goes all the way from, I'm in Las Vegas, so it goes all the way from 3 p.m. until 10 o'clock at night. Like when you say this is my Christmas morning, absolutely. This and draft night. I love the NBA draft night. That's more like graduation because I've known all these kids forever. So when you think of Christmas morning, like this is a toss up between the first round of the NCAA tournament and today, because this is going to be anything but a chalk year. When you look at the teams across the board, Kansas was the preseason number one. They just lost to Arizona last night and are going to be fighting for a spot in the tournament. Auburn looks incredible. Jani Broome, the national player of the year, he is having a phenomenal year. But they just lost to Alabama. They lost to Texas A&M in a very, very tough SEC. So they're beatable. I mean,
Gators.
St. John's looks like a hot team. Like they've lost two games since the beginning of January by a margin of 2 points. Like Rick Pitino, hello, welcome to March. So, you know, those are just like the little storylines that I'm looking at. And this is just going to like be a little taste, a sliver of what's to come in the next week or so.
And don't forget the Florida Gators.
Oh, yes. And the Florida Gators.
Looking like a one seed.
I forget them. Yes, they are hot too. Yes.
When you said the games, because you're in Vegas, that's a 3-hour time difference. and yes. they end at like 10. I'm thinking like once you get in your 30s and 40s and up, that's perfect. Like you're in bed at a normal hour. Like I might have to move to the West Coast for a couple weeks every year.
So I've lived on the West Coast before. I lived in Vancouver before, and it was great for like NFL Sundays was amazing. March Madness time of year when it's a full slate was amazing. But I never got there with because it's not like I was like, oh, I'm no longer going to watch the Jays, Leafs, and Raptors. I'm now going to watch West Coast teams. All my teams being on at 4 o'clock was that part was difficult. But the full day slates was amazing. Like you don't have to stay up till 1 a.m. You roll out of bed with a coffee and there's ball on. It's amazing.
That does sound amazing. Hey, Kristen, one question I wanted to ask. There seems to be a lot of buzz in the media that maybe this year's NBA draft isn't as talent deep as originally thought. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know who's saying that. And I don't know if they're just saying that because when we look at, you know, the casual NBA fan, the casual basketball fan, they are going to tune into March Madness and the NCAA tournament to get eyes on the top draft prospects. Well, guess what? They probably won't be playing. Dylan Harper, who's the projected number 2 pick, Ace Bailey, who's projected number 3, they played for Rutgers this year. Dylan Harper was incredible. Rutgers will not be in March. VJ Edgecombe, Baylor just lost to Texas Tech, a Texas Tech team that looks incredible. JT Toppin is playing his best basketball of the season. VJ Edgecombe, projected number 4 pick, probably won't make the NCAA tournament. Trey Johnson, yes, Texas just beat Texas A&M to advance and survive in double overtime, but they have a lot of work to do to make the tournament. He probably won't be playing. Asa Newell at Georgia, who's a projected top 10 pick, he won't be playing. So when we're looking at that, and if you haven't been watching these prospects over the course of their career from high school to some games this season, yeah, you could look at it and say, oh, it's not going to be as talented as we think. Absolutely not. There's a reason why there are so many NBA teams that are making the NBA hates when reporters say tanking. They're making strategic moves to not win a lot of games this season. And that's because of what's projected probably in those first two tiers, picks 1 through 8. And there's a lot of talent there, not only this year, but next year too. I'm not even staying here in Vegas Saturday and Sunday because AJ DeBonsa and Darren Peterson are playing a high school tournament in Salt Lake City. So for like my time on Selection Sunday, when I should just have my feet up, oh, who's playing who? I'll be in a high school gym in Utah, of all places, watching the projected top 2 players in next year's draft play.
That's awesome.
Do they go to prep schools or do they go to their public high schools?
Prep schools. Darren Peterson plays at Prolific Prep and AJ DeBonsa plays at Utah Prep.
I hate that. Nobody goes to their high school anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I heard you guys talking about Canadian players that transfer and come either to college or to high school for NIL deals. And I just called a Sunrise Christian game and that roster was littered with Canadian talent. Akeno Olozi, I just saw him at Basketball Without Borders. He was the MVP and that kid can play. He can play. So, I will give credit to where credit is due. The talent pool in Canada is definitely growing stronger.
I wanted to ask about a recent piece that you wrote, the most polarizing players in the draft. Not all these guys are going to end up being in March Madness. Some of them aren't even in their conference tournaments anymore. So I guess one of the names that you mentioned there was, I wasn't as locked in on Mountain West games yesterday as I was on the SEC games.
I'll fill you in. It's fine.
Nick Clifford. It seemed like he was probably the standout guy, at least box score wise from the Mountain West games yesterday. Where are you on Nick Clifford and how he's kind of closing his season right now?
I love Nick Clifford. He tested the NBA waters last year. This is a 6'6 guard. Played 3 years at the University of Colorado and then transferred to the rivalry school in Colorado State. And he elected to come back another year because NBA teams just told him, look, you need to get stronger. You need to get more consistent on your shot selection. And if you can show that you're one of the best players in the Mountain West, then you can really help your draft stock just with that extra year of experience. That's exactly what he did. He was the Mountain West Player of the Year. He has been the backbone for this Colorado State team that is trying to do everything they can to get that at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. In the last 4 games, last night he had 25 points and 14 rebounds, 4 assists in a win over Nevada. And in the last four games, he's averaging 26 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists. And when I told him that staff, it's like it didn't even register. He's just like, oh, really? I'm just trying to be out here and do everything I can to win. And what I think why we'll see him move up draft boards and why NBA teams are like, oh, he's a mid-major player. Can he be this effective in the NBA? The reason why more teams will elect to, yes, he can, is because he does all the little things. He's a perfect plug-and-play guy. He's a role player that he's not just standing there. He doesn't need the ball in his hands to be effective on both ends of the court. He's that two-way player. Got great length at 6'6", 6'7", and already has the experience and physicality to kind of make that jump to the NBA.
What is he projected at?
Right now, it's probably late first round to mid second round. I've seen in a lot of mock drafts. I think once the NBA draft combine hits, and every single year we see this, every single year there are at least one or two players that just shoot up draft boards because of what they do collectively, especially during the scrimmages, during the draft combine. Jalen Williams shot himself all the way from being a mid-major player at Santa Clara all the way to number 12 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And now he's going to be a max contract player. And so I think, you know, the combine will show a lot. I think once teams get him in for a workout, we'll see him start to move up draft boards. But he's someone that I think I'm higher on than the majority of NBA draft analysts.
What was the thought process going from Colorado to Colorado State? Because that doesn't make sense to me. That would be like I went to University of Florida my first 3 years, and then fourth year I'm going to go to like Florida Atlantic.
You're correct. Yeah. He's born and raised in Colorado Springs. His parents went to high school at Widefield High School. I know this because I too grew up in Colorado. So when I'm talking to his mom, she's like, "We're high school sweethearts." And so Colorado, the state, is just home. And so when it wasn't the right fit at the University of Colorado, CSU and the coaching staff, they just came alongside and they said, "Listen, like, this is how we're going to run our offense. This is what we'll run through him." And it was just a better fit. It wasn't like that, "Oh, I hate CU. Oh, let me show you." It was just, he's a homebody and he liked being in the home state of Colorado. And that's why he chose to stay.
Well, hopefully he gets drafted by the Nuggets.
Yeah, there you go.
Imagine.
There you go. Kristen, a little higher on the board, but also one of your polarizing players. And big game today between Maryland and Illinois, two ranked teams going at it in conference play there. Derek Queen, so 6'10", big, does some really cool, you know, if you're a Raptor fan, he does some cool like DHO, high elbow, delay action kind of stuff. Obviously, there were concerns about, you know, his body, but he dropped a bunch of weight heading into the season. Now he seems kind of in that top 10 fringe. Where are you on Derek Queen and how much does he have on the line these next couple weeks?
I did not have on my draft bingo card that Derek Queen would drop 28 pounds and become one of the most productive bigs in all of college basketball. I did not see that coming. He just coasted through high school. He was on that Mount Verde team with Cooper Flagg, with Asa Newell, with Rob Wright, and Liam McNeely at UConn. So he just coasted. They went undefeated his senior season. He gained a lot of weight, let's be honest. And even at McDonald's, it's like his jersey wasn't fitting in practice. And you're playing in front of NBA scouts and executives, and you're showing like you're a big guy and you don't care about your body. Okay, fast forward to September. He looks incredible. And what he's done at Maryland and kind of led the charge, he's become more of that versatile inside out big. He already has the frame to battle, you know, the size at the NBA, and his potential's through the roof. There is nothing more that NBA teams love than youth, length, and upside. And Derek Queen has all three. The problem is NBA teams might not be able to look past like just how easy it is for him to put on weight. Mm-hmm. And so if injuries come up, is this a Zion Williamson situation where, you know, you're fighting that battle? But I'm not going to bet against a kid who has been pretty much injury free his entire career. So I like Derek, you know, at least in the lottery.
I also wonder if teams might look at him and be like, well, look at all the work he was able to do on his body and improve his, you know, defensive range and things like that. And hey, if we get him into a pro style system, what can we do with him? And like, he's shown the commitment now to, hey, okay, I got the wake up call. I dropped the weight and my game improved and things like that. I could see that being, some teams look at it as a positive, some as a negative maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
I have two words: assault bike.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you swear by that thing, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, another big man I wanted to ask you about on your list, again, of polarizing names, and maybe less polarizing after yesterday, but Ryan Kalkbrenner, 7-1 senior center at Creighton, just a monster game in double OT to beat DePaul yesterday. He had 32-9-2 with 5 blocks. Is this a case of, you know, hey, there's like a little bit of an anti-senior bias, especially at smaller programs when it comes to trying to project guys?
I think with Ryan, it's almost the sense of, and I'm guilty of this, he's being over-scouted. Like, we've seen him for so long at Creighton. We've seen him last year. He took over the tournament, you know, and was trying to will them in that overtime win. And so testing the NBA waters, coming back. He started off really hot. What was that game? He had like 49 points on 22 of 24 shooting. Like, he was incredible. Then I saw him along with every single scout, maybe like 50 scouts at the New Era tournament here in Las Vegas. And he had a back injury and his lateral movement didn't look great. And, you know, that's a concern, especially defensively for 7-footers. Like, if you cannot guard the PNR, then you're going to not be playing a lot of minutes. So when you're looking at 4 or 5 years players in college, you want them to be able to like be plugged in immediately at the NBA level, at least in the secondary unit. So to see him come around at the second half of the season and really showcase his two-way ability, especially defensively as a rim protector, has been really, really promising for him.
That's cool to see. And yeah, the 40, I just double checked. Yeah, 20 of 22 for 49 points in the
it was insane.
In the opener. I had in my head that was last year, because like the start of the college season obviously feels like 5 years ago now. Kristen, before we let you go, there are a lot of names out there. We took a couple from your most polarizing players list there. Outside of that list, is there a name that maybe in your estimation hasn't been talked about enough yet that we're going to be talking about over the next couple weeks?
Yes. Jeremiah Fears, the Oklahoma point guard. They had a 1-point loss last night, but I think he's someone that can be terrorizing in the NCAA tournament. He started off super hot. He was getting a lot of comps to Trae Young and what Trae did at Oklahoma. And listen, he's a little bit on the smaller side, but he is tough as nails. This is a kid, last year as a senior, I was calling one of his games for NBA TV, played for AZ Compass Prep, and he took an elbow to the eye one game, had to go get stitches, came back, had a bandage over his eye, still played. He played with one eye, and he had something like 15 points and 7 assists. Tough as nails. So when you're looking at Trae Young comps, and if you're the Raptors and you guys want a true playmaking point guard, I think Jeremiah Fears, even though he might be a little undersized as a one-and-done prospect, you're going to start hearing his name more and more.
Yeah, he's a cool one. He's actually in my notes. I don't know who they're going to let me talk about on the pregame show tonight, but he's one of the guys to watch. Like, hey, this guy not mocked in the top 10 yet, but maybe he's going to get there in the 7-8 range, that, you know, hopefully five range that the Raptors pick in, but more likely probably 7-8 range. That
how tall is he?
What is he?
So yeah, that's the thing. I 6'4", mean, he's like,
but he's only 182.
But I don't even think he's 6'4". He's probably,
okay.
He's probably 6'2-ish, 6'2.5. Another player I think you guys should probably watch is Jace Richardson, the oldest son of Jason Richardson, longtime NBA player. He's playing at Michigan State. He was freshman, Big Ten freshman player of the year. And I think ESPN just launched him to number 12 in their mock draft the other day. So he's someone that I've known for years and is a player to watch as well.
Did he inherit his dad's athleticism?
Yes, but his younger brother, Jackson, who's a junior playing at Columbus High School with the Boozer Twins, is a walking highlight reel. Like, Jackson is going to be the one, and he has his dad's height. Jace is a little undersized at 6'2", 6'3", but still has that athletic ability and is a phenomenal passer and just a very, very smart player.
This is what a high school team. Hey, two of Boozer's sons and one of Jay Rich's sons. This is like, isn't Bruce Bowen and Tim Duncan, their kids play on the same high school team in Texas.
That's right.
Yeah. It's
TMI.
What a way. This is like how the Blue Jays built their entire roster, too. It's all second generation guys.
All I know is it just makes me feel old. That's it. It's
like, yeah. A little bit. What was it? Jameer Nelson Jr. Was in the tournament last year. I'm like, wait a second. There's a Jameer Nelson Jr. now. Yeah. Hitting that age.
Jet Howard.
Yeah.
Tim Hardaway Jr. I mean, we could keep going if you really want to feel old.
A lot of juniors. Yeah. I don't want to feel any older than this. Kristen, thank you so much for taking the time out. Know it's a busy week. Have a blast this weekend.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Kristen.
Kristen Peek, NBA draft analyst. Make sure you check it out, all her stuff on social media. She also does a bunch of calls. The NBA Future Is Now program, which if you have the NBA app or some of the NBA streaming things, they will broadcast some of the like marquee high school and showcase tournaments and things like that. So always cool to see that. You know, we only have so many hours in the day with NBA and now NCAA stuff, but it is cool. You know, if you, AJ DeBonsa, who we talked about, you know, he's the big NIL one who's going to BYU next year. I wonder if the Jazz might tank again next year. Yeah, big bank.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, let's pivot back to the NBA, although we'll chirp Mo a little bit because USC lost to Purdue last night and probably won't make the tournament now. So we can needle him for that a little bit. But let's talk NBA. There were a bunch of big games around the NBA this week that we didn't get to talk about a ton. Thunder Celtics, the Blazers-Knicks banger that we mentioned got a double bang from Mike Breen, but was a cool look at the Blazers' progress right now. That Bucks-Pacers game that had the crazy finishing play. A lot to talk about. Lakers trying to play without LeBron now. Warriors won again last night, 13-1 now with Jimmy and Steph in the lineup. Let's see what Mo thinks about all of that. We'll also get you set up for Raptors Jazz, which can't be a tank off anymore because the Jazz caught a $100,000 fine for overresting Lauri Markkanen. So
putting everybody else on notice too.
Yeah, although, so I'll actually address this right now because a couple of people have asked. So the Jazz got fined $100,000 for overresting Lauri Markkanen because he has had back issues, but in the league's estimation, they were overresting him and the injuries didn't meet the level of rest he was getting. I've gotten asked, well, what about the Raptors? Are they going to get hit with this as well? Scotty Barnes is the only player on the Raptor who qualifies for this policy. It is, you know, like the league wasn't coming down on PJ Tucker sitting out, Cody Zeller sitting out. It only applies if you have been all NBA or all-star in the last 3 years. And Scotty Barnes is dealing with a legitimate hand and finger injury. He's questionable for tonight. So the Raptors don't really, as much as the league might not love it, you're not going to catch a fine for resting Jakob Poeltl or Emmanuel Quickley. We'll get you set with the very lengthy injury report in the second segment as well. Mo DeKeel joins us next as the Raptors Show continues with Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors Show. Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner with you. Lots of fun college basketball going on this week. Maybe less so yesterday for our next guest. He's Mo DeKeel of Bleacher Report, Twitch, the warm-up on the NBA app, former NBA video coordinator. But Mo, tough one for USC. How you feeling?
I'm okay, and I appreciate you bringing it up very early in our interview. Just right away, let's just stick the knife in me and twist it right away.
All that, I love it. All that NIL money you donated for nothing.
All of it.
Down the toilet. All that Mo DeKeel money for nothing.
It's so much. So much and nothing. I guess I have to really kind of reconfigure where I'm going to put it next year.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this is you watch Mo's Twitch stream and there's a little thing. Donate to USC. Click here.
That's the whole Twitch stream.
Yeah.
It's literally just a link. I just trick everybody. It's and then there's just all your money has to go here now.
No, the Twitch stuff is great, man. And obviously the warm up on the NBA app that you and Zach have done is awesome as well. Wanted to go back. We're going back a couple days now, but we haven't got a chance to talk about that Thunder Celtics game from the other night much. And I know you did a great breakdown, you know, your usual thread on Blue Sky of the marquee games. You broke it down on Twitch, but bear with us. We're going to talk about some of that stuff again, that is okay with you. Biggest thing I wanted to ask about, we have, since we last had you on, we've now gotten a look at the Hartenstein-Holmgren two big lineups for OKC, and obviously a lot of stuff went well for OKC in that game. What have you seen from that pairing when they're on the floor together so far?
I think the biggest thing is just their ability to rebound. This has been something that's been the Achilles heel for the Thunder over the past few years. Adding that size and being able to have somebody that can crash the boards is big. On top of that, a lot of great stuff at, you know, between the two of them on offense playing off of each other. You know, there was a pick and roll where, you know, Chet finds Hartenstein on the drive. And then you have one where Hartenstein fakes the dribble handoff, turns the corner. You know, he hits Chet for a couple of buckets. You have a bunch of little different actions that they're able to play offensively. Like, it's fun watching this sort of 5-4 action, you know, in the pick and roll and the way they're going about it. Like, this is the thing that we've kind of envisioned when they signed Hartenstein, where we're like, wow, this is probably the biggest move in the offseason. And we're beginning to see it finally pay off now that they're both healthy.
They both move really well for seven-footers, mm-hmm. which really helps them on the defensive end. On the Celtics side, what'd they shoot, like 73s or something?
Yeah, they went 20 for 63, so 31.5%.
What have I been saying all year? Mo, you've been listening to our podcast. You know what I've been saying.
This is how you beat them in a seven-game series.
If you're going to shoot that many threes, like the variability, you're living and dying by the three-point line. If you're going to make a good chunk of them, you're probably going to win. If you're off, you're probably going to lose. And to me, if I'm the Celtics and I have that much talent, I want to have like a backup plan, and it doesn't seem like they've been going to it. Maybe they're saving it for the playoffs, kind of like that Rocky movie where he came out and switched to southpaw at the last second. The Celtics are like, we're shooting 50, 60 threes a game. And then when the playoffs come, they're just going to like post up Jaylen Brown and Porzingis every play.
Well, I do believe in that game they were listening to Mo, because you were lamenting live during that game that OKC was thrashing them on points in the paint. And then at some point in the game, Boston did pivot to try to get a little bit more going in the paint. Obviously, it didn't work out that well. Yeah, what do you make of Boston's shot diet against teams that, because obviously part of why they shoot so many threes is they're one of the best teams in terms of field goal percentage at the rim. So they spread you out and then shoot really well when they get there. But against teams like OKC,
if they get there.
Exactly. So against teams like OKC that make it harder for you to get there, do you think they're going to be able to go to that kind of counterpunch as regularly against, let's say, a team like Cleveland, even before they got to an OKC?
They're going to have to. Like, the thing that was really frustrating if I was a Boston fan, you know, in that OKC game is, you know, you didn't attack the paint. You only had 10 paint points in the first half. Then you had 16 in the third quarter, where it felt like that was the best quarter for them. That was the only quarter they won. And I think the thing that was amazing was they had 36 paint points in the game on 22 shots. Like, that's a great number. Maybe shoot more of those, you know.
That's what
and
I'm
I
saying.
Think that's right. Like, it just, you know, get in. There were opportunities to get in the paint. They got really shot happy from three. I think we see that happen with them quite a bit through the season. And the difference between this year and last year, their defense was better last year. I know they can probably get to that level. We know injuries, Porzingis in and out of the lineup, Drew Holiday and all that stuff. But if you're going to shoot 63s and make only 20, 21 of them, your defense has to be on a whole other level. And I think the Thunder were able to take advantage for them in that end. I think in the playoffs, they'll figure it out. I think they'll be healthier. I think, you know, I think that game goes differently if they have Porzingis, Andrew Holiday in there. I know, because all the Thunder fans are going to say it is, oh, we didn't have Jalen Williams. Yes, I know. And Caruso. I get it. But still, there's a big difference in the way the Celtics play when they have Porzingis on the floor, and their defense goes up another level when they have Drew Holiday out there. So I think that's kind of the way I would look at it. I think they'll be fine in the playoffs, but I do watch for them to get three-point happy.
I just wonder if you can pivot like that, if you can flip a switch. They do have the personnel to have the ability to be a very effective in the paint. Like, Tatum's really strong, can get to the paint. Jaylen Brown, we saw when he came in, he just beasted us every time we played him this season. When Porzingis is healthy, Drew Holiday has a good post-up game for a guard. Derek White's good at finishing at the rim when he chooses to do it. That's the thing. Like, can you just show film and be like, all right, here's our game plan. We need to attack the rim.
I mean, maybe.
And then all of a sudden everyone's like, all right, we're going to go from shooting 50, 60 threes to getting that diet that you're talking about, Mo. That would make me nervous if I was a Celtics fan.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's hard initially, and then you lose one or two playoff games, and it gets real easy to buy into the, right, to the change, I guess. Mo, the other thing I wanted to ask you about with Boston's volume of threes, and again, the absolute volume of it is a question mark no matter what. how they come about those threes. You pointed something out a couple of times in your thread on that Celtics Thunder game. And Boston is not statistically not a great transition offense overall, but the way that they push in transition to set up threes kind of mid shot clock, what can you tell us about that and how difficult that is for transition defenses to kind of get a hold of?
Yeah, I just think they do such a great job when they're attacking in transition, getting the defense to collapse on them, right? And that sort of opens up the opportunities there. Like, really, their best threes in transition or in the half court all come off of paint touches, where the ball gets into the paint and then they kick it out, because then they're able to get defenses rotating and scrambling. And even in the game, they had a bunch of wide open threes that they missed, and a lot of it came from paint touches, getting the defense scrambling. You know, I love the possessions, and you know, I'm a film nerd, so I just go nuts and get giddy when I see two paint drives from the Celtics in one possession. I'm like, oh my God, like, this is, they have to score on this because I'm going to be so happy. And that's kind of the stuff we're looking for when we're watching the Celtics. I think that's where they get going best. You know, they have possessions where, you know, Brown will break down the defense and attack the paint, then kick it out to Tatum. Tatum will drive, and then he'll find somebody like Horford open in the corner. And those are the threes you want. It's the dribble pull-ups that you can, you know, look, they're going to take those. Everybody does. And some of them are pretty wide open that they walk into. But you want less of those and more of these spot up wide open ones that are created, more importantly, than you just kind of like getting it off on your own.
It's funny how like team fundamentals over a course of a game, a season, play out like that. And you look at it, you know, being a film guy with the Spurs and other teams, and from the coach's standpoint, like, we need to attack the paint, kick it and collapse it. And if we can do that twice, more times than not, we're going to get higher percentage shots than if we don't. I remember with Coach Pop, it was always, the ball's going to change sides of the court. You got to make the defense shift. Even if it's like completely menial point, like there's no point to it, just by de facto ball changing sides of the court and making the defense shift increases the chances of some sort of breakdown on the opposing team's team defense that lets you be more effective on offense. These basic concepts, if like you can get that through to the players, it makes a difference.
Matt,
I love it.
Do you remember the drills? Like, we used to have a drill that was literally in San Antonio where it was drive and kick.
Yeah, with the three people. Yeah.
You know, I think Brett Brown used to call it like Main Street or something. Like, you had to drive into Main Street and then kick it out. It was, you know, it's along those things.
And like, you had to get your head under the rim, like under the center of the cylinder before you were allowed to pass it, to fully get the defense to collapse and commit. Yep.
Good drill. Okay, Mo, so what flows from this? Obviously, Boston, we have some questions about, and we're all looking forward to Boston, Cleveland, and then one of those teams against maybe OKC. But we saw Bucks Pacers, which could be a 4-5 series preview. And I guess before we get into any specifics of that, what is your feeling on, like, can any of the other East teams push Boston and Cleveland enough, or are we like pretty locked in on Boston Cleveland as the East final?
I think it's really, assuming everybody's healthy across the board, I think it's really hard to envision a team really pushing either of those two teams. Look how dominant Cleveland's been. They're on like, what, their 17th, 15th straight win streak? Like, it's
crazy.
It feels like just like when they lose, I'm just like, huh. Okay, like it's just random to you, you know, you're just like that seems odd. But like the way they've been rolling, and you got to give credit to Kenny Atkinson and obviously the players, they have kind of their system down. Boston's a machine, and when they're fully healthy, like, look, it's tough to beat Boston because they just have so much talent across the board. So for me, I just find it hard for the Eastern Conference team to really kind of push them in a 7-game series. If this was a one-off tournament, yeah, it's different, right? Like, there's a possibility for sure. If it was the best out of 5 in the first round, I'd say maybe they can have they'd get a problem, although the first round opponents may not be that difficult. But I think in a 7-game series, it's going to be hard for any of the other teams to beat them 4 times.
I need Cleveland to lose. I can't remember if you were with our team.
I wasn't.
In 2012, I think. We won like 20 games in a row. Like, we closed out the season on a huge win streak. We swept the first round. We swept the second round. We won the first 2 games against Oklahoma City. We'd won like 20 games in a row at this point. And then Oklahoma City beat us, and it was like, wait, what? wait, did we just lose? And it, like, I don't know what it was, but like it knocked us off balance and we lost four straight. And I've wondered if that would have happened if we hadn't won 20 games in a row. It's like a mental reset where you're like, I just need Cleveland to lose a few games. They can't just keep winning like this. Yeah, I don't like it. You don't want to be too fat and happy going in.
It had literally been 20 games in a row. You won the last 10 of the regular season.
That's
then
right.
Two swipes and up to. And you guys had an 11-game winning streak right before that, too.
Mo, I'm like a big, like, psychology guy when it comes to the playoffs. That's why I have Cleveland coming out of the East, is because, like, I just think with home court, they get in a 7-game series with Boston. Boston already won it. They're going to be a little bit more relaxed and not want it quite as much as Cleveland. You know, what is it, like a hungry dog, fed dog don't hunt or something like that?
Something like that.
That's kind of like trying to repeat. So that's why I got Cleveland. I'm a big believer in that.
That's a very college-esque thought, though, right? Like, that was always my thought going into the college tournament, was like, what teams on like a 15-20 game win streak?
You know, 7-game series is a battle of attrition. Like, it's a war.
It just pushes you
mentally to the brink.
What people don't understand about a 7-game series, and this is actually one of the reasons why I'm not as high on Oklahoma City as everybody else, is coaches get to sit down and scheme. And no matter what you think of the other teams, those coaches are really smart. We've seen it, right? And when coaches get a chance to say, for 3 days, we're going to sit in the bunker and our video guy is going to have done a phenomenal job with our playoff prep and all the videos and all the playoff books and all that stuff, we're going to dissect you and try to find opportunities to attack you. And I think that's the difference in the playoffs. You don't get that in the regular season. And for me, the way the Thunder play, I think it's perfect for the regular season, but I think that's something that's going to be very dissectable, and the right team with the right personnel can give the Thunder a big problem come playoff times. And
that's,
I think that's one of those things to watch for.
That's really interesting. I mean, you know, you were in the war room with Coach Pop. It looked like he hadn't slept in like 2 days, and we come in and the attention to detail, to your point, to squeeze every advantage out of every adjustment and every personnel report and what we want to do, every scheme. It just goes to a different level for sure.
Yeah, it was my first Red Bull. first Red Bull. I was like, because I literally had pulled I came from the Clippers. We were never in the playoffs. I didn't have to worry about playoff prep. So it was my first Red Bull, and I drank it or whatever. And I remember sitting in the meeting, and I was sitting next to Chip England, and my hands were just shaking because all of the Red Bull was running through me, and I couldn't sustain. And I remember just Chip putting his hand on me like, stop. And I was like, I can't. I don't know what to do. Like, this is too much.
It's like that scene from A Beautiful Mind when he just has like all the crazy research papers everywhere and all the equations. Like, that's what walking into that first film session to prepare for a playoff series with Coach Pop was like.
That's a tough one. Mo, what do you make? So maybe this is related to what you're saying about OKC, and obviously small regular season samples, but the Timberwolves have become fascinating for me in that they've won 6 in a row. That's great. Julius Randle looks great since coming back. But they also, like, weirdly, I think they've beat OKC twice and beat Denver twice. So they don't have like a great resume overall, but they seem to have something on maybe the two best teams in the Western Conference. What do you think of the Wolves as we're, you know, a couple weeks out from the playoffs here?
Yeah, I think they're a really tough team. Look, this is a team that also, majority of them went to the Western Conference Finals last year, beat Denver in a game 7 in Denver. Like, there's a level of confidence within this team that hey, we're not afraid of anybody. And let's just be honest here. Anthony Edwards can be the best player in any series. He has that talent. He can go off on another level. But what I love seeing is that they're defending at a higher level. I think Jaden McDaniels has kind of shaken off the relatively slow start. I think we know what we get from Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Dante DiVincenzo is over the fact that the Villanova Knicks traded him, and now he's kind of back into a groove. I think he's averaging about 16 points a game after the All-Star break and finding his rhythm and his flow. You know, it's going to be interesting. I am always going to be scared of depending on Julius Randle, but that's something you have to keep an eye on. That's like the X factor for them. But they're a team that's not afraid of either of those two teams at the top. They have wins against them. You know, the win against Oklahoma City was a big comeback win that led to them, you know, and did most of it without Anthony Edwards. And then it was in OT where Edwards came in and then made some key defensive plays. this team, I would be frustrated if I was the top seed in the West or the second seed in the West, and my prize is, oh, the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the other thing, by the way, if it's not the Minnesota Timberwolves, if they find their way to play out of the play-in tournament, okay, it's the Golden State Warriors. It's like, geez, the West is just ridiculous.
Yeah, those are two teams that definitely are not afraid of big moments. Playoff basketball. You look at what DiVincenzo did last year in the playoffs for the Knicks. He elevated his game to another level. That definitely has to be taken into consideration when you're looking at these matchups.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you mentioned the Warriors. The Lakers are in there if they get LeBron back, too. It's like, there's no... I guess like Memphis and Houston are the spots where you're like, oh, those teams are less experienced. They're also probably physically beat the hell out of you. Even if you win, you're going to be like, you know,
a meat grinder.
Yeah, in a little less. Like, there's no... You know, no disrespect to Atlanta, Orlando, Miami, and Chicago, but the Western Conference does not have one of those because I guess Dallas would be the one the way they're currently constructed, but they're not getting out of the play-in anyway. So it's a tough one. Mo, thanks so much for doing this, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you guys for having me.
Good to see you, Mo. Go Gators.
Oh, boy. Fight on, fellas.
Mo DeKeel, Bleacher Report, Twitch, the warm-up on the NBA app. Awesome dude. Let him go a minute early because we got to set up this Raptors Jazz game and try to fit all the injuries.
You need an extra minute for fast break.
Yeah. By the way, I did want to say one thing. It's very stupid, but the band Disturbed played at the Chicago Bulls arena last week. And at first it got reported that like, oh, the banners were down for the next Bulls game because like they just had to come down. But now we have found out via the Chicago Tribune that Disturbed actually damaged the Bulls championship banners, not like in an irreparable way, but the Bulls are not expecting the banners to go back up this year because they have to be repaired.
Not the band itself, but it's pyrotechnics,
yes.
Correct?
Yeah, they didn't, I don't think David Draymond climbed up there with his like weird double chin piercing, not to disrespect people who have had bad facial piercings before because guilty. But yeah, he did not climb up there himself. Really silly stuff. I didn't see Sum 41 and Pup, you know, lighting the Raptors championship banner on fire during that show.
Well, it was their last show. So if there was a time to do it, that was the time for Sum 41 to do that.
In Edmonton or something like that instead. All right, time now for Fast Break brought to you by the BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. It's Raptors at Jazz. 9:30 tonight on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So Eric Smith and Paul Jones on the call.
Might be a Red Bull night for me.
We'll be doing it'll definitely be a three coffee night or a Red Bull night or something like that. I got to write off the game after as well. Triple dip on this one. Jazz are 2.5-point favorites. Lauri Markkanen is back in this one, and that's kind of the interesting thing here that's different from the last time the Raptors saw the Jazz. I mentioned earlier in the show, the Jazz got hit with a $100,000 fine for, in the NBA's estimation, violating the player play policy with Lauri Markkanen, who, yes, has been dealing with some things, including a back injury, but in the league's estimation has been resting too much. His injury does not meet the standard. And if you're a Raptor fan wondering about that, that policy applies to players who have made the All-Star team or All-NBA in the last 3 years. So Scottie Barnes is the only guy that it applies to. Scottie Barnes tonight is questionable. He's dealing with that hand and finger contusion, which this wouldn't apply in terms of the $100,000 fine because we saw it get hurt and we saw it get aggravated. And you could probably just like go to the league and be like, his pinky probably looks like mine where my pinky doesn't straighten anymore. You'd be fine. The Raptors aren't at risk there. Ochai Agbaji is also questionable. He's trying to work his way back from that ankle sprain. Jakob Poeltl is going to rest this one. So Walker Kessler's probably going to have 40 offensive rebounds. Grady Dick, Jonathan Mobo, Jacoby Walter, Brandon Ingram, Ulrich Shamshe all remain out. And a notable one here, Jared Roden is with 905 this weekend. So Raptors 905 have a game back here on Saturday. The reason being, I think, no one told me this, but reading between the lines, Jared Roden only has a set number of days he's allowed to play in the NBA because he's on a two-way and signed late. So they are going to be careful about using those because RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley are back tonight. So save a Jared Roden
day. I was going to say 25, 12, and 4, and that's your reward to go back.
So he'll play with the 905 tomorrow afternoon. On the Utah side, Keontae George questionable. Zach Collins and Taylor Hendricks are out. And then Elijah Harkless, Micah Potter, and Oscar Tshiebwe are all in the G League. Great collection of names for the Salt Lake City Stars. Jazz are 15-51. They are only one win back of Washington in the loss in the win column for the worst record in the league. They lost the other day, even with Markkanen back. The Raptors, of course, seventh now in the lottery standings and have won five of their last six. So What a game this is going to be. That was Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. I actually do think it'd be fun to see how this one shapes up. Yes, no Jakob Poeltl, but Lauri Markkanen's back in there. Jordan Clarkson's back in, which we didn't see last time either.
I'm interested with the battle of the boards. We've been rebounding the heck out of it lately.
But Kessler had franchise record offensive rebounds last time. We'll see how it goes. Thank you to Mo DeKeel and Kristen Peek for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mon, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Again, it's Raptors Jazz 9:30 on Sportsnet with us and Sherm and Danielle Michaud and Brad Fay. On Sports at 590 The Fan with Smith and Jones. We will be back Monday to break that one and a Portland game on Sunday down for you. Should be a really fun one. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend.